When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Josh Smith, and welcome back to my podcast, Make It Rain. I'm a journalist and presenter, and I've been lucky enough to sit down and have unfiltered conversations with some truly incredible people. I know from my own experiences how powerful talking and crucially listening to others is, something you have heard about in this very podcast. And without a doubt, my life has been changed by the people I've met. I'm so excited that you are back to join me each week to meet amazing queens who overcome challenges in their own lives. They'll open up about their journey they've been on to harness their power and wear their crowns with pride. I really hope you'll feel empowered to own your own story and make it rain in your own lives too. In this episode of Make It Rain, we are joined by a real-life Disney princess, Naomi Scott. Naomi, who also starred in Power Rangers and Charlie's Angels, shot to fame when she showed us a whole new world playing Princess Jasmine in Disney's live-action remake of Aladdin. It took more than $1 billion and made Naomi a star. Now Naomi is lending her voice to a dramatic new podcast, Soft Voice, about a London estate agent who navigates two very different voices inside her head. And she's about to star in Netflix's new series, Anatomy of a Scandal, where her character is involved in a sexual assault allegation. Today, Naomi opens up about her changing relationship with her Christian faith after growing up with her pastor parents, how marrying her husband, footballer Jordan Spence, at 21 years of age has enabled her to grow together with her husband, and how not fitting into the English Rose demographic of actresses has affected her. There are so many amazing words about defining faith on your own terms, and I hope you love listening to Naomi as much as I did. So crowns at the ready, queens.
Here we are. So, Naomi Scott, babe, how are you?
I am fantastic. I'm currently in my car, you know, trying to create this booth. And everything was working against us. The rain came pouring down. I was in an echoey office. It was just not the one. But we figured it out, haven't we, Joshy?
Babes, we always figure it out. And like every good Charlie's Angels, we find a way through, hun, don't we?
Oh my gosh, 100%. You know me, I will figure it out.
Do you know what makes me sad about this is people aren't going to see the visual that is your stunning winged eyeliner you've been working on for a whole week, hun.
I know, and it's kind of ruined by this big-ass jacket over my head, isn't it, to create the booth. I love how, you know, this is the glamorous world of podcasts, guys.
This is the glamorous world of podcasts, and we're actually here to talk about your own podcast, aren't we, Soft Voice, which I've listened to the first two episodes, and oh my god, babe, I'm obsessed. And for anyone who hasn't listened to it yet, it's a stunning comedy thriller podcast, and it's for anyone whose mind works at approximately 1 million miles an hour. This is totally the podcast for anyone whose mind works like that, because you play London estate agent Lydia, who negotiates life with two contrasting voices, Soft Voice, played by Val Poley, and Dark Voice, played by Olivia Cooke, who I'm actually obsessed with too.
Oh my gosh, so
who informs her decisions for better or for worse, and it's hilarious but also is quite triggering at points too. What is the inside of your own head like, Naomi?
Oh, firstly, what a great introduction, Joshy.
Thanks, babes.
That was awesome. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. You know, the great thing about this podcast and I think also about dark comedies. You can kind of delve into it. And I love that this is, it was just, it's so British. It's so specific tonally. Mm. And when we got the scripts, like I binge read the scripts because I just loved James Blore, who's the creator. I loved his writing style. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of like, you know, Fleabag meets, you know, End of the Effing World, this kind of stylized world. And it's very personal to him, you know. It's kind of, there's so many themes that he explores in terms of, you know, the voices that we take on and these narratives that we take on, and even like performance culture, this idea that we're, you know, Lydia has almost created this voice that helps her navigate the world in a way that she feels like the world expects of her, you know, this idea of whether that's cultural norms or, you know, we all kind of do it to an extent. And James can talk about this much more eloquently than I can. But, you know, this idea, because he, you know, growing up, you know, as a gay young boy, and kind of this idea of, okay, I need to perform for the world in terms of what the world expects of me, and creating this voice that helps you do that, I think is really interesting, versus a voice that is all about self and all about self-expression and doing whatever it is you want whenever you feel like it. And what I love in terms of the feedback that I've got is like, there's a lot of different people have got different things from it, you know, and a lot, it's they've connected to it in different ways and related to it in different ways. And for me personally, it's funny because me and my husband talk about it. He, you know, he's an athlete from like the age of 9, right? So he definitely, soft voice and that idea of perfectionism, he definitely relates to. It's weird for me, the whole dark voice kind of you know, narrative, I do relate to that in some way, maybe because I feel like I've maybe there's something to do with feeling like you've done everything quote unquote right, maybe, and then there's that voice of like, yeah, but you know, what if you were just selfish completely and, you know, did whatever you want to do, and how does that manifest itself in like relationships or marriages and, you know, the commitment that you make to someone and kind of going, what if I just did whatever the hell I wanted, you know? What about you? Would you say that you're more like a perfectionist? Do you feel like you kind of lean more into self and going with the flow, or what would you kind of connect to more?
Well, it was really strange when I was listening to it because, you know, in the part where she's in the supermarket,
yeah,
and it's basically like she's selecting the yogurt and she's like, if you get this yogurt, you'll be really successful. If you do this, you do that. And I used to have, well, I still do have OCD, but I used to have really strong OCD thoughts when I was a teenager, and I used to have to touch things certain amounts of times, or I thought I was going to die or something bad was going to happen. And I basically had to live my life like that for a really long period of time. And when I was listening to it, I was like, oh my God, it was almost like that aspect of my mind was speaking through this character. And I was like, it felt like my thoughts were very heard and seen for kind of the first time material that I haven't really seen before, if that makes any sense.
Oh yeah. So where do you think that need to control came from, and where that stemmed from, and what was that process like?
Well, it was also it was at a weird time because it was in kind of like the early noughties when no one talked about mental health. No one talked about what was going on inside their heads in the way that we do now. And it got to the point where I used to have to like scrub my hands like red raw because I was so paranoid about germs, or I thought something bad was going to happen if I didn't wash my hands a certain amount of times. And like when it got to that point, then people found out about it and I felt really ashamed about it, because there is so much shame around talking about our internal thoughts, isn't there? Have you found that own shame in your own life about expressing what's going on inside?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and I was... you know, I've gone on quite an interesting journey. I'm a pastor's kid as well. So I grew up in church, and actually my experience of church and, you know, whether you want to, you know, religion or whatever, it actually isn't a negative one. My parents are actually incredible. And my dad, you know, he was very open to questioning and, you know, to to really delving into some of those questions. And sometimes we'd have, you know, hours and hours we'd chat. And at the end, he'd kind of say, you know what, Nay, like, sometimes you've got to live with loose ends. And that was something that actually, I think because he was open, it made me actually, I felt more comfortable talking about things. However, I think when you grow up in church, you can get a little bit cynical in terms of the institution itself. And so I question everything. And I'm a big, big questioner. And I've gone through that process of going, you know, this idea of God, is it something we, and, you know, I've heard this from, you know, atheists that I know, and this idea of, is it a need that we need that idea to lean on so as to comfort us from our lack of the lack of control that we have over our own lives versus something that is real. And I have really kind of delved into this and kind of figured out, okay, what makes sense for me? I've had, you know, my personal walk with God, and I do feel like there are too many things. And I mean, whether that is something as simple as looking at the creation and the idea that creation is just this design, and there must be, you know, a designer behind that. And also the idea of me believing that each human has value and kind of going, well, where do I get that from? The idea that each human has value, because not every society in history has believed that. But all I'm just, you know, trying to be honest about my journey and go, yeah, I so that's how I've kind of landed in where I am. And the Bible's a whole nother minefield that maybe we don't have time for on this podcast. Gosh, that needs hours and hours long to discuss that. But anyway, in terms of, you know, faith, I definitely would say yes. I feel like I do have a personal faith and a personal relationship with God, and I feel like grace, the idea of grace for me is something that doesn't really let me go. The idea of, you know, giving something to someone that they don't necessarily deserve, and I feel like that stems from God and how he kind of loves us.
What do you think's maybe tested your faith the most, or tested your faith in this idea of a bigger plan almost?
It's a great question. I think what's tested my faith is the ideas of God that I had growing up. I think sometimes we grow up with ideas of God that maybe aren't actually what has been fed to us in terms of what we've been told God is, or the, you know, the do's and don'ts, or all these things. And as you get older, you almost feel like you grow out of them. So then you kind of go, wait a second, maybe it's all just a load of rubbish. Jordan's granddad always said, like, everyone needs to know God for themselves. And I think that's so incredibly important. I think sometimes, as I said, growing up in church, and it can be so easy to go through the motions and still not really fully understand God. And sometimes I feel like we put God in a box. We think the idea of God is actually something that's quite contained and like regressive and not open-minded, when actually I think the opposite. The more I'm beginning to delve in, I'm like, wait a second, like, you know, these ideas that we have of God, we're actually closed-minded. God is actually like going, no, like, you don't even know the half of it. So I think that things that have tested my faith is growing up and questioning sometimes Christians. The idea of this idea of a Christian also is the worst, can be like, I feel ashamed to even be associated. I can't connect with some of the things that they say and do, and there's a disconnect there. So it's kind of like, I think that's been a challenge for me, or something that's offensive, or something, or even like the Bible itself and some of the things that are in there that I've just been like, whoa, hold up a sec, like, what is this? Like, this does not, I can't pretend to even connect with this at all. Those are the things that have tested my faith, that have then forced me, as I said, to force me to go, okay, either you should explore this and actually understand it for yourself and not put any kind of pressure on yourself, but just be like, no, like delve into it, see what you actually like discover. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. But all throughout the process, again, I just feel like I've always felt God just wanting to be in relationship with me regardless of all the other stuff that's going on. Humans are so imperfect and out for themselves, you know, so you're kind of going, wait a second, is this just something that was created for power and etc., you know? It's trying to, as I said, reconcile something that is spiritual with humans who always seem to make it about their own personal greed and power.
But I think it's really interesting because that goes back to the themes of Soft Voice, which is all about this internal dialogue we have with ourselves. We're constantly questioning society and everything that's around us, right? And I think we all have these voices we carry around with us, and this internal voice can kind of sometimes be the most powerful voice, and it's kind of encouraging you to push yourself and to speak up for yourself and advocate for yourself. And that's what happens in Soft Voice too, to her detriment sometimes, but ultimately most of the time it's to make sure she feels seen, valued and heard. Is there a time you wish you advocated for yourself more and listened to that internal voice more?
Oh, 100%. I worry too much about what people think about me, 100%. I think when I was younger, you know, starting out in the whole acting world, there was a sense of, you know, this idea of I have to be a certain thing. I think there's something interesting in, you were talking about, you know, Lydia, she's like finding her own voice, or actually figuring out that, whoa, I don't even have my own voice. I don't even know what my own voice is. And even with, you know, in my industry, they like to put you, you know, in boxes, and especially back in the day, Josh, being half British, half Indian was an interesting thing because, you know, it was either like they'll put you in the British Indian content box, or, you know, I would find myself being like, oh, I want to be like an, you know, I need to be like an English Rose because that's how I'm going to get work. And I need to be... you know, I'd go up for period pieces and never, you know, of course, like back in the day, you know, like 7 years ago, it was different. It wasn't, you know, I was just too, they couldn't place me, you know. And actually I was trying to be something that I wasn't, rather than leaning into my unique advantage. My unique advantage is just who I am. Your unique advantage is all of your experiences that you can bring to what you do.
I think back to, especially what you were saying earlier about projection and also being labelled. I think when you get, there's so many boxes still in our society that are placed on people, labels are placed on people in order to make them more digestible. So you also then have this problem when you're like, oh, I'm a man and I'm a gay man. So, but then am I being too flamboyant? Am I being too this? Am I being too that?
Wow.
It's the two, or am I trying to be like too masculine in this situation? And why am I trying to like take on this other part of a personality that's not even mine to then order in to fit into a box that I don't even want to be part of? And it's just those constant negotiations, isn't it? And it's always goes back to this idea of being to something. You're either to this or you're to that. Had that? And because it's so much sexism that comes with that. You're too much. You're to this.
Oh, Josh.
You're to that.
1,000,000%. There was a moment where I was like, I need to make sure I don't take any this British Indian content, because then I'll just be in the Indian box and I don't want to just get stuck there, because I want to be like, you know, why can't I be like Keira Knightley? Why can't I be like, you know, all these English Rose actresses that you look up to? So you're thinking, oh, but I need to be like these white actresses in order to get these roles. So I need to reject that Indian, that otherness of me in order to succeed. And that's where, you know, and as you were saying, like, I find that so interesting. So yeah, it was like, I've had, oh, you're not white enough and you're not in. And then also, by the way, Indian content, sometimes I get sent stuff and I'm like, guys, like I this is not my story to tell, because, you know, maybe it's a I don't know, a story that's set in India, and it's like there's a whole nother conversation that goes that's around like non-resident Indians. Like if you're not from India, like I'm half English, half Indian, but I'm very British, you know. So I'm like, I can't even. And then I find myself like I feel shame because I'm like, oh, you know, someone's talking about something Indian and I don't know the references, and I'm like, oh no, like I'm not Indian enough, and I feel like I can't represent that group. But then I'm like, you know, I'm very, very British, but then I don't feel like I can be the posh. So I've definitely had this, like, am I too one to the other? And it's actually my husband that kept being like, why are you trying to be you? Because no one else is you, Naomi.
I feel like one of the things we might actually have in common on this situation is the people-pleasing thing and wanting to be liked by everyone. And as you go through your whole life, especially at school, where it's the most savage experience ever with that, where you're constantly trying to be like, I need to be like everyone else to fit in, or I need to be the most liked person ever, and you forget yourself. And then you end up assimilating to a tribe you don't even want to be part of. And then it takes you years to then try and find a tribe that you then settle into.
School, I did do a bit of that, by the way. I remember hanging out with the popular girls and feeling so uncomfortable because I was scared I was going to make a wrong move. But finding my tribe, I've been very blessed, as I said, because me and my husband have been together since we were really young, and we've really grown together, which I do think is a rare thing, because, you know, when I think more often than not, two people, they grow up and they grow up in different ways, and we manage to grow, you know, whilst challenging each other, grow together and remain connected. And our friends, you know, there are some friends that we've had since we were younger. Similarly, we all challenge each other, and we all are very honest with each other. So we do have a wonderful, wonderful friendship group, in that sense, that is like our family. We've created our own tribe, I guess. I think that would be very different for maybe you or other people who maybe have grown up. And I'm not putting, this may not be your experience, but I think especially when sexuality comes into play, you know, if you're in an environment that is not, let's say, inviting of you to be open about that, I think that is a whole nother hurdle, and something, a great challenge. I don't know, with you and finding your tribe, you know, what was that for you in terms of growing up, and did you feel like there wasn't, you know, you couldn't find that until like maybe later on?
Oh my God, definitely. Because you spend this whole time hating yourself and carrying this secret around with you. And you're like, oh my God, this is like, I can't let anyone know this. I can't open up about it. So then you assimilate to everyone else around you. And then you almost cut yourself off from finding those people because of the shame you have around opening up about who you are and what you're like, right? And who you like. And then so you go for this full circle. And then now I think when I look back, I only really found my people when I was like in my like late teens, early 20s, maybe even a little bit later. That's when you discover yourself and your people around you. And I think what's so interesting you were saying about relationships too is that actually relationships can really help you manage that and who you are, because I think we're so taught as a generation to be this kind of like fierce, independent woman, independent man kind of generation. And actually, I've actually found from getting into positive relationships, that's been the thing that's helped me form who I am in new ways, and also helped me with my mental well-being too. Has that been like that for you as well?
I love what you just said. I think that's so important. I think, you know, this idea of you do you, surround yourself with people that encourage you. These are all great things. However, sometimes we can oversimplify it to surround yourself with people that agree with you in every way, shape and form. And I believe, like you said, that relationships should also challenge us. And I love that you said that in terms of relationship was so key for you, your growth. I think that's so, so important. which, by the way, is why it's so important who you choose to be around, because you become the people that you are around, right? But I think that I am a very firm believer in the people around you being able to speak into your life honestly, and be like, whoa, 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 babes, like that ain't it, you know, or just you know, challenging your way of thinking. And we definitely have that in our friendship group.
Well, I think your best friends should be a reflection of who you are as a person, but they equally should be able to call you up on stuff.
Exactly.
They should be able to say, like you were saying, babe, I don't agree with that. Like one of my friends, Holly, she's the queen of this. She'd be like, what do you mean by that? And I'd be like, and then she'd
love it.
Quiz you on it. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Holly. You've actually taught me something about that opinion that I've either outgrown that opinion and I'm still spouting that opinion, and you're checking me on that opinion, and it's helping me formulate a new opinion. And if you are surrounded by yes people all the time who are saying, oh, you're great, babes,
yeah,
or that opinion's amazing, or whatever, it's like, even like my boyfriend Tom, who's like, babe, you need to like clean up after yourselves a little bit more. And I'm like,
husband.
What do you mean?
That
like,
is literally our relationship for the last 10 years. So you're me. So I'm guessing you're me in the relationship, and your boyfriend Tom is my husband Jordan. That's what it sounds like.
Babe, it's constantly like that. It's a negotiation. And I'm like, babe, I don't want to have this perfect life.
The thing is, do you know what's really funny about that? Is it just doesn't change. Like if someone asked me what me and Jord fight about the most, it's literally like putting things away, like me putting things away. Part of what makes him brilliant, and he's very intelligent and he's very driven, and in whatever he does, he will be successful. But part of that that I love about him also means that he likes things in a certain way. And so you kind of, you know, the very thing you love about someone, I don't know if you feel this,
thing
you love about someone can also be the thing that you bloody... just the noise.
Babes, just before we got onto this podcast, I had an argument with him about that. They'll be like, not everything can be perfect, you know.
Exactly. I'm like,
the towel can't always be put back perfectly,
yeah,
babe.
And Josh, and do you like... also ever do that thing where you're like, you're stunting who I am? I sometimes make a dumb thing, like literally like, oh, I don't know, like say like my clothes being out. I'll make it like it's a really deep thing. Like, this is who I am, okay? Like, I want the clothes out because I need creatively to... And Jordan's just like, don't even try it. Like, you... like, and he, do you know sometimes as well, it's like, there was... The other day I was like, what do I do in this relationship? Because he literally does the bills, he cleans, he cooks, he does everything. And I realised, I went, what do I do? And he literally looked at me and he goes, you bring the fun. And I was like, okay.
Babes, I feel so seen by this conversation. I literally, if I get told that kind of stuff, I make it into a huge thing in my head, like, oh my god, like the stunting thing, I just need this to be me, and it's complete bullshit.
Like, literally, you make the most stupid, like putting something away, and you're just like, you are not letting me be who I am. When really they're just like, yo, just like put it away because you're gonna lose it, like, oh my god.
Exactly. And I lose everything, so this makes sense. Well, babe, that is the tea, and we're gonna serve some more tea after this quick little ad break, so hold that line, hold that tea. Make It Rain is proud to be working with Aurelia London, the experts in probiotic skincare. I don't know about you, but coming out of winter, my skin is looking super dull. So to bring back my glow, I've been using Aurelia London's Probiotic Concentrate to supercharge my everyday skin routine, using it alongside the Aurelia London Day Moisturiser. Probiotic skincare gives the ultimate glow, no matter what your skin concern is, from fine lines to rosacea and even pigmentation or acne. And because Aurelia London and Make It Rain are all about empowering people to glow inside and out, I have a special code for you. Get 20% off the entire range by heading to aurelialondon.com and using the code Josh20 at the checkout. Well, welcome back, Naomi babes.
This is just so much fun. I'm just loving this conversation, Joshy.
Oh, babe, I'm grinning from ear to ear. And I mean, I feel like with most people, everyone, as soon as they instantly saw you as Princess Jasmine, serving us those looks, babes, serving us that independent woman vibes, we were on board. And I mean, that has been such an amazing catalyst in your career, hasn't it? A massive turning point.
Yeah.
In many ways. And like 2019 was a massive year for you. You then went on to be in Charlie's Angels, which is high kicking realness at its best. More high kicks than the Sporty Spice and the Spice Girls World Tour. Do you know what I mean? But was it quite a weird experience to go from having those huge moments in 2019 to then having to sit with yourself last year and physically pause?
Oh, I think that's such a great... It's a great question, because I think that it forces you. I could have easily, you know, from that moment, you know, 2009, you could easily get on some sort of hamster wheel, right? Of like, okay, now I'm going. And to be forced to pause and go, okay, what do you want to do? What do you want to say? What do you, you know, that was so important, because... It brings you back to basics in terms of why do I do what I do. I also went through, you know, a load of health stuff as well, which again takes you back to basics, and it forces you to kind of just review everything and why you're doing it. I feel really blessed to have been able to have that time. And also, by the way, sometimes as well, when you're part of these big movies, and, you know, Aladdin made, what, $1 billion. You have to also understand that you're part of that. You're not the reason that it made, you know, you have before me, you have Disney. Before me, you have Aladdin is the star. Before me, you have Will Smith. Before me, you have, you know, Mina. But, like, I was a part of that, and that's amazing. But I also think that sometimes actors, it can, you know, a big success, it can also be your worst enemy, because then you're like, oh, okay, well, surely I should... You know, you then assume that every experience, or you then assume that, like, if it doesn't keep going that way, or if you're not in another big hit, or if you're not, you know, picked to be the lead of this other big movie, then it's like, you know, well, what's happening? You know, well, I was just in a movie, you know, and you start to compare yourself, and you really can sink into that dark hole. But again, when you go back to basics of like, no, forget all that. That was amazing, but... No, I just want to be better. For example, the show I'm on now, this Netflix show called The Anatomy of a Scandal, based on a book by Sarah Vaughan. It's an incredible piece, and it's an amazing cast, you know, Sienna Miller, Rupert Friend, Michelle Dockery, and it's SJ Clarkson is our director, and it's basically about this MP who is going to come out that he's had an affair with his parliamentary researcher, and you're following, you know, the aftermath of that with, you know, his wife, who Sienna Miller plays, and you're following this lawyer, Michelle Dockery. It then comes out that she's accusing him of rape, and then ensues the court case, and it's a whole look at privilege, and that the scandal is not just the rape, but the privilege. And I play the parliamentary researcher that accuses him of assault. And it was so fantastic written. I was like, I want to fight for this role. And I think originally the role was like a younger Sienna Miller, actually, you know, white blonde girl. And they ended up going with me. And again, I don't think they thought of me necessarily for that role, but I really fought for it. I wanted it. I really wanted it. And it's been such an amazing experience and such a challenge, but I've grown so much, and just being around these really great actors, and that's what, you know, I want to be doing work like that, that I can really, that really challenges me. I'm really excited about that show.
And the subject matter of Anatomy of a Scandal is, I mean, it's forever so important. It's about consent. It's about sexual assault. It's about the trauma of victims. It's about privilege. What have you learn, or has some of that subject matter been very triggering to have to explore as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, all I can say is I'm never gonna obviously fully understand, and I can only do my best, you know, and a lot of that was listening, whether that was whether that, and I varied my content, everything from, you know, listening to interviews and people talking to, and it's a shame that I don't have to go far outside my remit to also know friends and people that have, you know, experienced sexual assault and talk to them. And then even, like, you know, there's this play called Prima Facie by this Australian playwright, and she's also a lawyer, a defense lawyer. And it was so interesting because it's basically about this defense lawyer, and she defends people who have been accused of sexual assault. And she kind of talks about how you test the law, and you know, that's just the way it is, you know, and the law should work, and you know, that's enough, and that's justice. And then actually she's in a situation where she's assaulted, and it's a he said she said thing, and she realizes how, wow, maybe the law doesn't work for these victims. Maybe there are things that are intrinsic, and maybe there are things that are whether it's miseducation surrounding assault, whether it's just, you know, the way that these trials are, the process of them, whether it's the things that we use against victims, i.e. why didn't you leave, i.e. why didn't you call the police straight after, that actually speak to, there's such trends in terms of someone who has gone through a trauma and how they would react in that moment, that actually they're the very things that actually you shouldn't be using against them, but actually should be for them. And so the way that we look at it so black and white when we're questioning these victims, and then by the way, there's the whole thing of society and how, you know, this idea of not believing a victim and kind of going. And for me, you know, just listening to people's experiences, whether, you know, in conversation or just like watching things as it pertains to sexual assault, it was so illuminating, because each person, that, you know, the similarities and the contrasts in their experiences, whether it's someone that you know and trust that you could never imagine doing this to you, whether it's a stranger, whether it's an abusive relationship. I think part of the problem is we also like to put sexual assault in this box of what we think sexual assault is, and if it doesn't fit into that box, then we're mistrusting of it. And I think this show begs the question, it asks us as society, why? Like, why are we mistrusting? Why are we so quick to disbelieve a victim? Why is our initial reaction to question them rather than protect them? And I think the answer is very complex and very multifaceted, but it's really important and it's really worth asking. And that's why I just applaud the bravery of people that speak out, because let me tell you, from my discussions and my, you know, limited understanding, there is not a lot to be gained other than, for a lot of time, that feeling of, I don't want this to happen to someone else. And you know, for people that are brave enough to tell their story, hopefully bit by bit, it not only empowers other survivors and gradually chips away at the stigma that we so often attach to victims, but it also educates us so that we can shift our focus on the actual problem, which is the perpetrators. You know, that's where the problem lies. So it's been, yeah, I feel very blessed to be able to, and I do feel a sense of responsibility in terms of this role. But for me, it's always about what is the filmmaker's vision, and does that align, and how they want to portray this character and how they want to portray the story. And I trusted SJ so much that I felt really comfortable and empowered with the decisions that we were making on set. And I felt really, really happy with that. So, I'm really proud of the work that we've done. And I think it's going to ask more questions of the audience than try and win an argument.
Well, I think it's so amazing about what you just said, and which I really loved, is the listening aspect. And actually, throughout that whole discussion, if we actually just listened to people more, and we listened to victims, and listened to everyone around us, we will create a better society.
Oh, 100%. I think empathy, right? Isn't empathy just, yeah. I really am just, as I've been thinking about this, you're right. Listening, and not just listening to respond, but listening to understand. And the more we do, whether that is this, whether that's, you know, what happened last year in terms of, you know, I think there were a lot of people that had to look at themselves in the mirror and go, wow, I've not, there's so much that I am, don't know in terms of Black Lives Matter and it not, as I said, not being defensive, but just listening. Mm. And so for this in particular, I found it that was the best way for me to listen and to take in all this content and then figure out how my character uniquely would navigate her situation. You know, she's still in love with the person who's caused her so much pain. What does that look like? And that's another thing. It's like we question, you know, whether it's domestic abuse and why didn't you leave, whether it's, you know, this conflicted feeling of what if you're in love with the, and that doesn't just necessarily go away. You know, you still might be in love with them. You still might, like, and that's what I mean about it's so complex that sometimes in the court of law and the court of public opinion, it's oversimplified. And if we don't understand what sexual assault does to someone, then how are we going to understand the symptoms and the effects and whether to use that, to not use that against them, but to actually understand that maybe this validates their claims.
Mm. Oh my God, 100%. That makes any sense. Oh, babe, makes all the sense. And I think ultimately you are out there, you're doing the work, you're shattering those boxes, you're making it rain, honey, over your own life, you're making it rain in your pocket of the industry, and you're making change. And you're doing it from listening and absorbing and shattering boundaries. And that's what it's all about. And that's what's being a queen is all about, and making it rain. And at the end of every episode, babe, we always ask our queens, in the rain of your life, what is the one rule you will always live by?
Keep the main thing the main thing. That's what I always say to myself. Keep the main thing the main thing. Because J. Cole says, I love J. Cole. One of his lyrics is, the good news is I came a long way. The bad news is I went the wrong way. Like, what is this idea of, like, what is success to you? You can, as I said about the hamster wheel, you can go, 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 go. And then you find that you're in a place that actually that's not even what I want. So figure out what is the main thing to you in terms of what you want from life or what success means to you. And then make sure you're reminding yourself of that, you know, every day.
I love that. That is a freaking great message to end on. And thank you so much for joining me underneath the confession quilt that is the sound booth that you've created in your car, babe.
This is hilarious. I've taken a screenshot, by the way, and I'll send it to you. You can use it.
Please send it to me, because I feel like this is just hilarious. This needs to be released, babe. This stunning screenshot. It's
brilliant.
Oh my God, I've loved talking to you. I can't wait for that drink, babe, so we can put that world to rights. We've got many conversations to pick up from this, actually.
By the way, and I want to get into it. Yeah, I'm so down.
Oh, babes, we're going to have an agenda. Thank you so much for listening, queens. I hope you enjoyed this conversation and take just as much away from it as I have. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcast from, so you'll know which amazing queen is joining me next time. And make sure you share this around your friends and get those conversations going, because we need each other now more than ever before. Hi babes, me again. Just wanted to tell you about something very exciting. I can't believe I'm about to tell you this, but I've written a book and it's called Great Chat. As you know, I love to chat, plot spoiler, and I love talking to people about their lives because, as I always say, talking and listening is so powerful. The book is all about how you can master conversation and transform your life, just like it has for me. I've used my experience from all the amazing interviews I've been lucky enough to do, as well as a load of research to help you deal with everything from making new friends to embracing difficult discussions. Great chat should never be underestimated. It can truly improve your well-being, allow you to create the life you want, and bring the connections you are so deserving of, babes. You can pre-order Great Chat today in hardback, ebook, and audiobook, read by me, no less, and it's out on the 20th of June.